Welcome to IndieDrome, the podcast about indie games. It's indie, so it can be short and it doesn't have to be good. Hi, I'm your host Matthew J, and I'm here with Stevie Grant.
Hey yo.
Hey Stevie.
Sup?
What you doing?
Nothing much, been playing some indie games.
What? That's exactly what we're here to talk about.
No way! Whoa!
Yeah, by the way, thank you, Stevie, for coming over here to take the studio all the way from England.
No problem. I'll be coming here every time we do this show.
Yeah, once a week.
Yeah, I'll be doing that, and obviously the Sega Addicts studio, which is where I come from. We both come from, we hail from.
We do. Once a week we'll be here to talk about all the recent indie game news, indie games we're playing. It's easy to keep up with us because indie games are usually cheap. So if we mention a game, it's because we want you to play it. So
yeah.
Please go out and pay the $5.
Or cheap or free.
Or free. A lot of these games are free.
Yeah.
But we're not just talking about indie games. We're talking about mostly indie games, but also games that we think just don't get enough coverage. So certain companies who are a bit smaller, especially game or companies that publish things from other countries that wouldn't see light here otherwise.
You're talking about Exceed, right?
That's one of the companies that I might mention.
Your bloody basically wife at this point. Matthew J publishes one article about Exceed a year about how they're the best, and they both
wife in the sense that I follow everything they do and they don't really know who I am.
Okay, maybe you're just like the creepy stalker at work.
Yeah, it's something like that. No, not always Exceed. I mean, yes, today on my list of games I've been playing, there is an Exceed game.
Nah.
And it's not necessarily indie, but because it's Exceed, I'm counting it.
They should grow up and become X-Tree.
I think you should grow up, Stevie. Just grow up and stop making terrible jokes like that. Stevie, since this is a pilot, and we've already lost most of the listeners that we would get anyway because of your stupid jokes, let's do what we've been playing and just kind of ease into things before, you know, we start getting into the cooler episodes. Like next week we'll be interviewing the creator and composer of They Bleed Pixels, the indie Steam hit.
They're
that's
actually
out
two
now.
Separate people. You made it sound like they were the same.
Yes,
person.
The creator and the composer are two different guys. It's yeah. Miguel and
it's
Sean.
Actually his split personality who did one of those.
Yep, they're both Canadian.
Yeah, they're basically the same then.
Yeah, how many people live in Canada?
Like one, and that's
I think
him.
It's one. Yeah. I think it's just that guy. Yeah. It's just Miguel Sternberg, creator of Spooky Squid Games and They Bleed Pixels.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we both played They Bleed Pixels this week. I reviewed it.
We have, and you gave it an overwhelmingly positive review on GameTire.
I gave it an 8.5. No, I gave it a 5 out of 5.
Which is insane, and I don't think... Well, first of all, we have to talk about like what a 5 out of 5 is. Like, I personally don't think 5 out of 5 is perfect. I do think They Bleed Pixels has problems. But I would say, I would go along with you and say it's 5 out of 5 in terms of the enjoyment that I get out of it.
Yeah, I mentioned in my review because it's a side-scrolling action platformer rendered in pixels, which we don't get a lot in the indie
thing. No,
we get a ton of them. We get so many of them, and yet this game still stands out. Because primarily, I think it's because H is beautiful, and most pixel games aren't that beautiful. They just use pixels as like a ploy to get the retro guys to come in. And
well, it's not. It's a cheap alternative. It's like in the 90s, like Clerks started this whole trend of indie movies being in black and white because it was cheap, and it looked aesthetically good.
It's not necessarily cheap. Actually, the reason we don't see a lot of pixel or even just like 2D hand-drawn based big games is it can be more expensive. I guess pixel is cheaper than 2D, so maybe that's it.
Well, no, I think it depends how well it's done, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think it's always super cheap. I think usually when people use it, it's to specifically pull a certain kind of audience.
Yeah.
Which is an audience who will buy whatever is sort of retro.
Yeah. But also it is kind of, I don't want to say easy, but it is kind of just like the default for a lot of indie games, which is sad because, you know, I love indie games and I would rather the pixel thing, you know, just be reserved for when it's really, really good. But obviously, you know, you can't do that.
Yeah, but this game certainly does do it.
Oh,
better
this
than
game does it. Beautiful.
It is a gorgeous, gorgeous, amazing, gorgeous game.
Like, the reason I like pixels is the fact that people can take these tiny little dots, just these different colored dots, and just make something amazing from it. And that's what I loved about it, just the world it creates. Like, the fact that each of the levels has its own background, and the backgrounds are pieces of art on their own.
They're huge. The backgrounds are enormous, too.
Yeah, and like,
the levels are pretty huge. And it's not just pixels. They used a combination of pixels and paper and ink textures.
Yeah.
So it's got a bit of a like a grit and a texture that you don't get in a straight pixel art.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Mega Man 9, basically.
Yes, it does not. It does not look like Mega Man 9. But what gameplay wise really sets it apart is, you know, it's hard like a lot of those 2D pixel games, but it's also has a, you know, remarkably deep and simple combat system that's based on one button. You have your jump button and your attack button, and your attack button, depending on what else you're pushing and where you're facing, will do different attacks. Like, if you hold it down and you're not pushing the D-pad, she'll do a high kick and kick people straight up in the air, and then she can either kick them into like a spike or a saw blade, or jump up and continue to hit them. Or if you hit it really fast without hitting anything else, just tap it, she'll kick them away into another person or into a saw blade or something. And if you're holding forward, she'll use her big lobstery claws, the main character I'm talking about. She'll use her big lobstery claws to do, like, direct laceration-y attacks on people.
Well, don't forget, it also depends on how long you're hitting the key for.
Yeah, I said that.
Well, I mean, it's even more deeper than just how many times you press it, which I appreciate in the game, that they thought of more ways to make it. Mm-hmm. More ways to make it deep rather than, oh, just hit the button 4 times now or hit the button 5 times now.
Yeah, and the combat system is great, but I don't think it's where the game really shines. Like, it's really good in some parts, but then when there are parts where, like, just to make it harder, they'll throw a ton of enemies at you, and I think that really is where the flaws in the combat system show. Like, it's a bit sluggish, and it can get confused as to what you're trying to do if there are too many enemies. And it's hard to cancel an attack once you do it. You can't. Like, once you're in a motion, she's pretty much going to complete that motion, and sometimes that'll just put her right in harm's way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think the best part about it is the platforming. The platforming is fantastic.
Oh, definitely.
You have a double jump. She can wall jump. There's a ton of stuff to do with the wall jumps.
Well, the platforming is basically based around wall jumping. It's not really from traversing left to right. You're often going up or down.
Yeah. There are a lot of very vertical... And also the wall jump is, you know, when she clings to a wall, she'll slide down it, and you can control how quickly she slides down it.
Yeah.
And that also adds a bunch of nuance to it. So, like, there are whole segments that feel like their own little puzzle where you're just sliding down. Like, you're sliding down, you're dodging, you know, saw blades or spikes or something.
Yeah. And it's just incredibly good. And I said it, and I think this is an amazing compliment, but it's pretty much the best platformer since Super Meat Boy. And considering that Super Meat Boy pretty much reinvented the platformer, like, it might sound a bit hyperbolic, but I do think that it's true that that game...
I don't know about reinvented.
Well, it influenced a lot of indie games and a lot of platformers now.
Yeah. The last, what's it been, like a year and a half, 2 years?
I think it's two years since Meat Boy came out.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, the last couple of years we've seen a lot of very heavy... And I'd say this game feels pretty Meat Boy influenced.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if I found out that a lot of it was inspired by it, at least maybe gameplay-wise. I don't think
it's been in production for a long time, so it's possible that it influenced a bit, but I doubt that it was like at the inception of the game.
Yeah. My favorite thing about the game is the theming of it, though. It has a really good theme.
Yeah.
And the story, whilst not obviously the main thing about it, it does have an intriguing Lovecraftian sort of story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually what, like, I think that there's a lot more substance to it, and that's actually what sets it, because it's not as tight as Meat Boy control-wise, not even close, but substantially it goes way above Meat Boy, I think, because it's about this girl who is sent to... The Lafcadio Academy for Troubled Girls or something. And when she goes there, somebody who presumably lives there or runs the school gets this ancient book, this horrible, evil book, and curses it somehow.
And no, it's not 50 Shades of Grey. Topical joke.
Is it really topical anymore?
I think it's pretty topical.
Okay, good. I just there's an edit point that I can use to cut that out. Okay, so he curses this book, and this book basically haunts her, and at night transforms her into this horrible Lovecraftian monster where she grows these big lobster claws and turns purple, and then goes through the incredibly terrible levels where she kills a ton of demons and does all the platforming stuff and dies tons and tons of times.
The thing we noticed is that the game does. The whole game is sort of linked, and we noticed this because I was playing this and we were discussing it at the same time. Mm-hmm. But each night she discards of the book or tries to get rid of it in a different
way. Each morning.
Way. And yeah. Way...
Every night she goes to bed and this happens, and then every morning she wakes up and the book is there again, and then she gets rid of it in some way.
Yeah, and the way in which she gets rid of it influences the next levels.
Yeah, like she'll chain it up and throw it into a river off of a bridge, and then there was a water themed level after that, and there was one where she buried it, and it was like an earthy plant themed level.
Well, it was also that in the water themed level as well there were chains, so it was like you were almost getting closer to the book the more the levels went on. And
that's my favorite level.
I think that's a theme in the game as well, is that in the dream she's sort of being summoned to collect the book again.
Yeah, and the Lovecraftian elements definitely show through in a lot of ways, like just who the guy who cursed the book might be. We find out there's like some kind of cult stuff going on. I don't want to spoil too much about it, but and none of this is like directly told to you. Like everything in the story is totally passive narrative. I think this is a perfect example for when people are looking for something that's told really passively in a really good way.
Well, it's the story is as deep as you want it to be.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Like, if you want to read a lot into it, you can get all this sort of Lovecraftian sort of references. On a side note, the thing I like about the game is that it doesn't do the whole internet meme thing of bringing up Cthulhu. Like, it's obvious that...
There's a little bit of Cthulhu imagery, but it doesn't...
Well, no, but it's not...
It's not in the game or
it's
something.
It's not like, oh, Cthulhu, right? That's the joke. Which is what a lot of the Cthulhu references are in modern internet culture. But they actually reference Lovecraft stuff that isn't like the big named thing as well.
There's that one part where she puts on a banana suit and dances to Peanut Butter Jelly Time.
Yeah,
but other than that, there's like no... There's no pandering.
Internet, yeah, no internet memes. Other than the fact
there's that part where she gets hit in the knee with an arrow.
Yeah, and there's the part where her face, like, she goes, fuck, and her face gets crumpled. All of these are original jokes, listeners. You're probably really laughing just for how little you've heard these.
Chris Hardwick shows up and just tries too hard, and that's a very internet kind of thing to see a lot.
Ray William Johnson comes in and just ruins everything.
All right, that's enough. We're done. So, making enemies in the first episode.
I'm going to call it out here. I don't mind if I make an enemy of Ray William Johnson, because he's a fucking idiot.
Let's not talk about Ray. That's not indie. Okay, so to go back to the whole...
Independently makes me mad.
To go back to the whole review score thing, I gave this game a 5 out of 5 on Game Tyrant, and I stand by that score because I enjoyed this game. And I hate review scores, because I hate having to explain my review score all the time to people who didn't read the review. It's your 5 out of 5, and I think, I didn't like this about it. I'm like, well, if you didn't like something about it, why did you give it a 5 out of 5? Well, that's not what that means to me.
Yeah, no game is going to be absolutely perfect. I think the point of a 5 out of 5 is saying that if a 10 out of 10 or a 5 out of 5 or an A+ should mean you can look past the flaws. Like, every flaw you can look past and still have an amazing time.
You know, my favorite video game is The Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker, and that game has... what I would call one of the worst segments in any video game ever, and I consider that to be my favorite video game.
Triforce part.
Yep, collecting Triforce shards. Yep. Jesus jumped up Christ. Okay, so what else do we have to say about They Believe Pixels? Besides next week, come back and
we talk about the creator
and the composer.
Well, we've actually talked about it more than I think we should, because we are going to be talking about it all next week. But
we're not going to like talk about...
analyze it,
our enjoyment with the game and analyze it.
Well, basically, I think you should just play it because...
I think everyone should play it. It's $10.
Yeah, and I don't think that you should judge it just because it is a pixel-based game. I will say that I don't like the title. I think They Bleed Pixels implies it's something that it's not, just by having pixel in the name.
I don't have much of a problem with that. I think it's kind of just bland and doesn't really explain much about the game.
I think the fact that pixel is in the name kind of implies that it is just retro graphics, and really there's a whole lot more to the game.
Yeah, and I might have thought that about it if I didn't play this at PAX East. Which I did, and really, like, this has been on my radar since I played it at PAX East, but I didn't even know that it was out until the day it came out, and I looked at the Steam homepage, and it was right there.
Yeah. But yeah, They Bleed Pixels is good, you should play it.
Yep, everybody play that game, 5 out of 8.5. Stevie, what else have you been playing?
I've been playing The Basement Collection by Edmund McMillan.
Ooh.
So The Basement Collection of Edmund McMillan, he did...
Of Team Meat.
He did Super Meat Boy and The Binding of Isaac. Basically, this is all of the games leading up to Super Meat Boy. So they're all Flash games, but they're all subtly...
The prequels,
but they're all subtly redone. They've got some new graphics and some new music. And the thing I like is that he included a lot of extras, and you can unlock stuff as you go along and get commentaries and stuff. And there are some new levels for games.
Yeah, like extra, you can unlock games, which you don't like that. But you can do it.
Well, no, they're smaller games in his library.
I don't care. I paid for it. I paid for two copies of it because I bought the game for you.
Shut up.
I want to play those games.
You're supposed to tell them that.
I don't care. It was on sale.
But so it's a lot of his Flash games, and it's just a lot of cool extras that you can get.
The original Meat Boy is one of them.
Yeah, I didn't like it, and I used to love
it. Still okay. It's not Super Meat Boy, but it's okay.
I don't think it controls as well. I think you can.
Well, no, definitely
you can,
not.
Yeah, I know Super Meat Boy controls amazingly well. And I think when you go back to Meat Boy, you see just how well they improved the controls.
Maybe you can see where it comes from, you know?
I can see where it comes from, and it's obviously like the prototype of Super Meat Boy.
But it's like you watch Alien, and you're like, this movie's pretty good, and I can see everything started. But then you watch Prometheus, and you're like, oh, this is where everything was leading up to.
Yeah. Oh, this is the best.
Oh, thank God he became a good filmmaker and made this.
Yeah.
So I don't have to watch Alien anymore. Yep. I snapped my Alien Blu-ray in half the day I saw Prometheus. Did I ever tell you about that? When I was walking home from seeing Prometheus, I bought Alien on Blu-ray.
Just
because it was on sale. I just walked into Best Buy and bought it.
The taste out of your mouth.
No, I actually... Well, we talked about it already, but this isn't a place for that. Name some of the other games that are on it. Time Fuck is one of them.
Time Fuck, which is my favorite game in the collection.
Did I tell you my experience with that game?
Okay, so you haven't previously played these games before.
No, I haven't played any of these games. I played the original Meat Boy on Newgrounds, like, before Super Meat Boy came out, but that was it.
Yeah, I've played a few of these as they've been going along. Time Fuck is my favorite one. What was your experience of Time Fuck?
I played some of it the other night, and I would have played a lot more of it if the load times weren't totally super long. And really annoying, also. Like, the load times have these really annoying sounds while you're playing them. And it's like each of the beginning levels, you know, the first levels in a puzzle game, so they're usually pretty simple. And I would complete them in like under a minute. And then I had to sit and wait at a load time that's even longer than that level. And then I just got fed up with that and turned it off.
Oh, no. So you didn't actually play a lot through it?
No, I didn't play that much.
I
didn't meet my future self.
I think you should, because the load times, obviously, because it's a puzzle game. I think the load times get a lot less irritating because you spend more time in the actual levels. So I think it is worth going back. And I think the thing about that game is sort of the atmosphere. And I think it also has the They Bleed Pixels thing of the story is as deep as you want to read into it.
Yeah. Although I'd say that one's a bit more overt because there's like dialogue and stuff. And They Bleed Pixels is totally silent.
Yeah, yeah. But it's still... you could still ignore it if you wanted to. It's not like there are like mandatory cutscenes.
I actually did it, and I'm doing that a lot by accident. Like, it took me a couple of screens where I realized, oh, there's a guy to my right talking.
Yeah.
And you can go back and replay all the text, but I didn't bother with it because of load times.
Yeah, but I really like that game. It's actually my favorite one in the collection. The next... I'm sort of going backwards here. Meat Boy, obviously, Spewer. Did you play any of that?
No, I hear that's good, though.
That's a good one. It's
we're talking about it on Steam. on Steam's new awesome community stuff. I think that they're doing... I really like that. Have you messed with that at all? The hubs?
The hubs?
Yeah, if you go into Steam and go into your library or any of the games on the site, they are all now connected to like a forum and also a place to share your screenshots and a place to share videos and some other cool stuff too.
Mm. But it's
all the game hubs. It's cool. Like I've actually been using it to whore out some of my articles and people are okay with it.
Some other stuff with Steam at the moment, like the green light thing that's going on. But that's so.
We'll talk about that in a bit. We'll talk about that after we do this.
Yeah. But like, so Spewer is good. That's sort of like a physics sort of platformer where you swallow liquids and you can regurgitate them at will and you propel yourself off stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's Triacnid.
But why is it called Spewer?
Because he spews all over the place. You can throw it up.
Oh.
There's Triacnid, which is I don't really like Triacnid. It's one of I think it's his first game, his first Flash game, and it definitely shows. It's sort of like a puzzle game where you control the legs of this creature with your mouse and you click and drag him along. And I just think it's slow, and I didn't really think the game.
Was like Quap?
No, not really, because it's all with the mouse. And it's
a lot of his games are basically tech demos for physics stuff.
A few of them, yeah, now that I think about it.
He made Gish, right?
He made Gish, yeah.
Yeah, Gish is like a big tech demo.
Basically, yeah.
Everyone kind of hates... I like Gish.
I only
played a bit of it, but everyone kind of hates Gish for that reason. Because it's just like trying out some stuff, but isn't very substantial in any way.
Yeah. I just don't think Gish is very fun either. There's also Coil, which is in the Basement Collection. Did you play Coil?
No, I just played Time Fucking Deep Boy, actually.
Okay, I'll just run through him. Coil is kind of this sort of art game where the instructions are very vague and it's all with the mouse. And it's purposefully very vague and I can't really talk about it. But I don't really like that because sometimes the puzzle will just be figure out what to do. And I don't think that should be the basis for any puzzles, really.
Uh-huh.
I think Coil is an interesting experiment, but I'm glad it's like a 10-minute game or whatever it is. After Coil, I think the last one is Grey Matter, which is sort of a bullet hell shooter where you control the bullet. You smack yourself into things and you have to find a way to dodge you have to find a way to dodge the projectiles coming at you from the enemy ships and try and form chains. And that was actually created with Tommy Raffines, which is he did the programming for Super Meat Boy. So there's actually it actually shows the basis of the first, you know, people who then went on to make his next biggest game, Super Meat Boy, doing Grey Matter. But that's basically the Basement Collection in a nutshell. Let me check if I missed out any. I didn't miss out any, did I?
I don't think you did. You wanted to talk about
Aether. Which is a really, really nice game, and I don't really want to spoil that, but that's also kind of like a physics-y type thing. It's all based around sort of planetoids and gravity and sort of flying through space, but it's a very nice, charming game, and I actually think it has a lot to say about, I'm going to sound super pretentious, but childhood loneliness, which is a big theme, and you can see like a lot of Edmund's themes have to do with childhood in a way, kind of. And I think it's interesting to see in the Basement Collection because he does explore that a lot throughout his games. Like, a lot of his games are about childhood.
Sounds like Paranorman.
Yeah.
You wanted to make the Basement Collection the main theme of this episode. Do you have more to say about it?
Well, I thought you were going to actually play it also. I don't...
I'm a busy guy, okay? I got a job. That's about it.
I thought you were going to play it, but you can edit that out. But I think there is a lot to talk about. Cause
I'm going to edit out the whole thing.
I do like the idea of collections coming out based on the game's creators, because we don't get that in video games pretty much at all.
Yeah, there's not much of a criterion thing. Like we're getting a bit more of it now that... backwards compatibility is kind of dying, and there are game companies trying to do whatever they can to resell us old things and trying to keep us from buying old things.
Yeah.
Unless they're totally controlled. Like, I recently went to buy Parappa the Rapper on PS1 Classics, and it's not there because it's on PSP, so I got to go buy the PSP game. stuff like that. Like, you know, like all the HD collections are coming from Sony, and even a bunch of stuff is hitting Steam, and good old games is around. So, yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot more of that, you know, in this nostalgia-driven medium.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it also has a lot to do with video game personalities. Like, I can't really think of video game personalities, you know, outside of Miyamoto or maybe Suda51.
Well, there are some more. There's like Kojima and...
Hideo Kojima and... But I think then you get to the indie stuff, and because it is so based on personality and a lot of indie games are personal experiences, I sound so pretentious, but you get...
You can say it sound that way.
You get a lot of sort of personalities, like you get well-known names like Phil Fish and Edmund McMillan and Brian Pavinci.
John Romero,
but you know these names, and then you can look up the games that they've done, and you can see their backlog, and that they have a personal like collection of they have a personal like backlog, just like filmmakers and directors.
Especially if they make you their bitch, like John Romero did.
Yeah, basically.
Remember that? Suck it down.
Yeah, that should be. We should. I got an idea for a poster to tease this podcast, Matt J.
Do you want to interview John Romero?
No. I'll tell you after.
Okay. That's a good thing you told me on here.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Do you have anything else to say about the Basement Collection?
Just that it's good and that it's got a lot of interesting things. And I really want to wait till you...
Super cheap. It's what, like $4 or $5?
Yeah. And it's like, it's got a lot of bonus features. Like they've got some stuff from Indie Game the Movie, like some interviews that weren't used in it. And
oh, really?
Yeah, and some Q&As and stuff like that with Edmund, and it really goes into the creative process a lot, which I like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's a good guy to go into that with, also.
Yeah, because he is definitely becoming a really big name in video games anyways.
Yeah, I mean, Super Meat Boy was a huge deal.
Yeah, and
deal.
So was Binding of Isaac has become a huge deal as well.
Yeah, I bought that and I still haven't played it.
You should play that.
Bought it like when it came out, because you told me to buy it.
So I played the Basement Collection. I also played Analog: A Hate Story, which I really want you to play as well, Matthew J, because...
I want to.
I've told you about it. It's a visual novel kind of crossed with like this romance simulator, kind of.
Uh-huh.
The premise is that it's the future, and there was this ship, this Korean ship, which got sent off years ago. And it's been like centuries since it went off, and like families have lived and died on there, and it completely disappeared. And you've found it's just sort of appeared out of the blue, and you've been given the jobs to go through all of the text logs and find out just what happened on that ship. Mm-hmm. And the AI comes on and helps you do that and deal with that. And from there, the game is essentially a mystery. And I really like the immersion factor, because there isn't really a character in the game or a main character. You are the character. And when you play the game, it's like you're booting it up. So it's like you are literally going through all these records of this thing. And like, granted, the gameplay is very limited to just sort of choosing choices and figuring out some sort of stuff from the text logs that you read. Obviously, you don't get the text logs from start to finish. It jumps around a lot. But I really like the idea that you're piecing together this really complex and interesting mystery. And when you figure out just what's going on, you think about how original it is. And it actually is really, really good. And I don't think a lot of games have tackled this subject matter that Analog takes. I think it deals with misogyny in a really interesting way as well, which I can't think of many games which actually address misogyny other than just, you know, Lollipop Chainsaw by having it be a parody, you know?
And who made this?
Christine Love, who's been known in the past to do other sort of text-based things as well. She did.
She wrote it, right? Did she make it?
She wrote it. Yeah, she wrote it, and I think she makes it as well. I'm not sure, don't put me down as that, but she writes it and goes through all the choices. I think she does a little bit of programming.
I'm not saying the writer doesn't make the game.
Yeah, no. They do. And I think
I'm a writer, we're both writers.
Well, it's all text-based and all story-based, so the writer basically does make the game in a sense. She also did Digital Love Story, which is analog, A Hate Story is a spiritual sequel to. And she also did Don't Worry, Babe, This Just Ain't Your Story, which is also the same type of text thing. But I really want you to play it just so you can sort of...
I will.
Yeah. So
where can I get it?
It's on Steam.
How much is it?
Actually, it's in an indie bundle right now, so you can get it for really, really cheap.
But then I gotta buy a bunch of other games?
Yeah, but it's like 10...
You know I hate indie games.
It's $10 on Steam, and if
yeah,
you
it's $10.
It, you get
the soundtrack
it in...
is $5. It is a demo.
Yeah, if you get it in the Getaway bundle, you get it with like 5 other games for however much you want to, you know, pay for.
Are they good games?
I haven't actually...
Oh, it's in one of those indie bundles? I think you meant like a Steam bundle.
Oh, no, not a Steam bundle, no.
They just...
I sent you a link for it, but Analog
of Hate... Oh, it's Indie Royale. Just say Indie Royale.
It's the new Indie
Royale. We support Indie Royale.
Yeah, it's the new Indie Royale bundle that they've got going.
Okay, yeah, I'll buy that.
Yeah. And
I don't have a lot of money.
Yeah, well, that's perfect for you then. But
the minimum is $5.29.
But it... Yeah, we'll buy it.
If you pay over $8, then you also get the soundtrack album.
Yeah. But it's really, really good, and I can't wait to play more of it because you really get engrossed with reading these text logs because it does become a thing of, like, this is your job. Like, I really think it does an interesting thing with immersion in that sense, that you feel like you've been given this task. And I think it's also quite an emotional story. So Analog A Hate Story is good, and I suggest you
On the Indie Royale, if you're one of the top 10 contributors, you get a t-shirt. If you're one of the top 5 contributors, you get a piece of meteorite rock.
That's amazing.
I don't know why. Oh, I guess because of Shattered Horizon. That's in there. Not To the Moon. To the Moon isn't in there.
So what?
I didn't like To the Moon. Have we talked about that before?
I haven't played To the Moon, but a lot of...
Okay, we won't talk about it then.
What other stuff have you been playing, Matt?
I've been playing another game that some people might not consider indie, but it was published by a little publisher called Xseed. I mean, I'm not saying a little to be coy. I mean, like, they're a small publisher. They put out pretty much just weird Japanese, not necessarily weird, but a lot of weird stuff. Like Japanese games that wouldn't necessarily make it here otherwise. Like, they put out was it Yuji Naka's fishing game?
Fishing Resort, yeah.
Yeah, Ivy the Kiwi, which I loved. That was one of my favorite games
of
that year.
Don't forget, you have to say that as if it's a question.
Ivy the Kiwi?
Like that?
Because the title ends in a question mark.
Yeah.
They've been doing the Ease games recently, and we're going to do an episode about Ease at some point once I get you to play them.
Wise games?
No, I wrote a whole article about the Ease games they put out so far on GameTyrant.co, so go find that. And, they also just put out a game called The Last Story, which, again, isn't super indie because it's made by Nintendo. It was directed by Hironobu Sakaguchi. It wasn't made by Nintendo. It was published by Nintendo in Japan and Europe. Directed by Hironobu Sakaguchi, who people might know as the creator of Final Fantasy. And he pretty much, even when he stopped directing games, the last game he directed before this was Final Fantasy V, which I think was like... Is it 20 years ago? Almost 20 years ago?
It depends if we're talking about the Japanese version or the American...
Final Fantasy 3.
Okay, right.
Final Fantasy 3/5. And then he continued to oversee the Final Fantasy games up until 10-2. He left after 10-2. And also the music is done by Nobu Uematsu, who people might know as the guy... Who does the Final Fantasy?
It's basically
music.
Like a greatest hits of the people who started the Japanese RPG genre.
I didn't see it that way. I saw it more as like getting the band back together. It's like Prometheus. It's like Ridley Scott's going back to the Alien franchise. And these guys are making. And as someone was on the One Up podcast, After Time Babel, which is their podcast about RPGs hosted by Cat Bailey, and he said it was the best Final Fantasy game in over a decade, and he's right, because this game is super Final Fantasy, but it pushes RPG conventions into the next generation in a way that I haven't seen this generation at all. Like, a lot of the things really push a lot of stuff. Like, the combat's... I've only played a little bit of it, but because I'm reviewing it, but I only got a chance to play a bit of it. But the combat system is kind of like the East 1 and 2 combat system, because... The way your attacks work is you just run into people and your character attacks them, but it's way deeper than that. Like, it's simplistic, but there are other facets to it. Like, you're playing one character in your party, and your other characters in your party, you're kind of telling them what to do in sort of a Kingdom Hearts-y kind of way, but way more controlled. Where, like, your characters, your mage characters will kind of hang back and shoot magic attacks, and you have a crossbow that you're shooting with in addition to using your sword. And then your main character has this special ability where he can attract all the enemies to him. So they'll focus on him. So you can control all the enemies too. So you can lead them into like an ambush or onto a bridge and destroy the bridge and stuff like that. And then also he goes into this like supercharge mode when he's doing that, where your main character, where he'll like get his health back when he attacks people and stuff like that. And the combat system is just really, really, like, it's totally interesting. It's something that I haven't seen before. You know, it's not turn-based. It's all in real time. And feels completely unique. You know,
did
a lot of RPGs.
Did you play Xenoblade? Because I wonder how it
stacks
up to that.
No, I didn't play Xenoblade. I really, really want to play that. I haven't had a chance to. That's another game that was Nintendo refused to publish in America for some reason. Or no, I don't know if it refused.
Although I will say, from what I've played, I played Xenoblade and Pandora's Tower. Pandora's Tower blew Xenoblade out of the water. And I really hope...
three games. It's Xenoblade, Last Story, and Pandora's Tower that
really
weren't coming to America. And then this... kind of grassroots campaign called Project Rainfall.
I really hope the Project Rainfall guys manage to get Pandora's Tower out here.
Two for three so far. You know, they really fought to get these games out, and Exceed published Last Story. You know, just this. I mean, Last Story originally came out in what, late 2010, and we're just now getting it this last month.
Yeah.
And we had Xenoblade earlier this year sometime.
Xenoblade
Who published Xenoblade
last year?
Was it last year?
Well, it was
in
last
America?
Year. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm a filthy European.
You guys got it last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is also why in both games everyone's British.
Because
we didn't get a new localization. But the localization of Last Story is fantastic.
The localization wonderful. For Xenoblade, I wasn't a fan of.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they called everyone like chaps and blokes.
No, they didn't. I just thought the voice acting just wasn't very good.
There's this one part in Last Story in the very beginning where a character's drunk and she says the word chap like 50 times. So you could tell, like, if it was in America, she'd be saying dude.
Yeah.
Or guy. She'd probably be saying guy. But, yeah, we haven't gotten Pandora's Tower yet. Who published Xenoblade in America? Do you know? Was it Nintendo?
I think it was.
I don't remember. But Project Rainfall basically got these games over here. The two games so far, and now they're working on Pandora's Tower. And actually, there, if you go to their Facebook page, they have a thing going on Pandora's Tower right now where people are sending letters to Nintendo, and they give you where to send them, and they give you like the number to call to ask for it, which is always the way to, you know, squeaky wheel. Let them know you want this game and that you will pay $50 for it on the Wii.
Yeah, going back to sort of the English translation for a second, I just wanted to ask, do you think the fact that it's English accents, do you think it adds to sort of the fantasy element of it? Because obviously
it's kind of like playing a Dragon Quest game in that way.
Because you're obviously American. Like, for me, I don't think it would make a difference. But do you think it adds for, like, would you rather play this game with English voices or British voices? Or would you rather play it with American voices? Do you think
I'd have a preference. I think the only reason I'd even want it to be in American English is just so Nolan North would be in it. But other than that,
every
like,
character,
because he just would be in it. Like, this is, it's, of course, it's gonna happen.
It's like, hey guys, is there a video game coming out? Nolan North, get in here, fuck.
Yeah, but I don't think I'm the right guy to ask about that because, you know, I watch a ton of British TV and movies. I talk to you all the time. You know that I'm very open to British stuff. I'm used to. I barely even hear British accents anymore, just because I, you know, you and I have each watched Peep Show like 50 times, stuff like that.
Exactly, yeah.
I love Mitchell and Webb, I love Black Books, I love IT Crowd, I love Doctor Who.
Well, I'm just used to it because I just hear in my head all the time, it's just how I think.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know if I think in a language.
Do you think, do you think in your own voice?
I think in smells. No, I don't actually. I think I sometimes think in my own voice. But if I'm listening to, like, if I marathon a podcast or if I listen to a long podcast where it's only a couple voices and one of them gets stuck in my head, like the other day or recently, I marathoned all through No More Whoppers, which is Ray Barnhold and Alex Fraioli's podcast. And it's a wonderful, wonderful show. And Alex Fraioli has a very, you know, defined voice, and he's a very big personality. So for all day, my inner monologue was in Alex Fraioli's voice. And that totally happens. Like, if I see a movie and I like a character too much, their voice will get stuck in my head.
Yeah.
So but yeah, I don't even think I notice when it. I noticed that they were all British, but I can get into the game because it doesn't matter.
Maybe you would notice if an American character just came along going, "Well, howdy."
Yeah. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Last. I'm Woody. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Woody. That shot.
But because I've only played like an hour and a half of the Last Story, I don't have much to say about it. It seems to be like it's very much as it like pushes new conventions. It's very tactical. Like when you get to a battle, you'll get an overhead view of the battle, and you'll get to move around and look at all of the enemies that are there and like plan your attack. Yeah. And then you can plan what your other guys are gonna do, and then you run out and do your own stuff. And then also it's very old school in a lot of ways, where like there are towns and people you can talk to and shops, and it feels way more open than a lot of modern RPGs do. You know, like Final Fantasy 13, so everyone says about that game is that it's Final Hallway 13. Yeah, this game is not like that, because it's, you know, made by the Gooch.
Yeah, well, exactly the same thing with Xenoblade. Like, Xenoblade is a huge open world game, and it's just, I think that it concentrates more on gameplay and world, whereas Final Fantasy 13 was just sort of up itself in its story, that it just would refuse to let you play it.
Yeah, this game definitely, like, the mechanics are very modern, but everything else about it kind of feels like a PS1 RPG. Like, it feels very like Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9 in a way. Like, there's some broodiness to it, but there's also a big element of fun and adventure. The story it starts out remarkably similar to Final Fantasy 9, actually, in a lot of ways. And it's, you know, just goofy and fun. Like, it started out kind of...
Is it a goofy game?
It's an extremely goofy game. It's not. It takes itself seriously, but not too seriously. Like, Hironobu Sakaguchi, dude made Final Fantasy V, knows how to make a good RPG, just hasn't done it in a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've only played like an hour and a half of it, so I don't really have a lot to say about it. I can say that I totally love it. Oh, one other thing about the battle is, I've only seen this in one battle so far. I'm sure it pops up a bunch, where at the end of the battle, there's this little like summon circle at the other side, like where the door I was about to go through was, and I could go into that circle and just restart the battle. Like, it would just make new guys pop up, and I did the battle like 5 times because it's a really fun battle system and I wanted to try it out, and I leveled up each of my guys like 2 more times. So it's like it's also that keeps it from like there are no random battles. You don't have to search for the best place to grind, and you also don't even really feel like you're grinding. It's again, it's like the first two East games, because you just ram into dudes and just letting it go, and it flows kind so well that it doesn't feel bad at all.
Kind of like Chrono Trigger.
I mean, I guess, in the way that it's not a random battles, but nothing else, really. Really nothing else. And okay. there's cover mechanics, and you can go into first person and shoot stuff, and it's also over-the-shoulder camera. So it's modern in that way, too, but even that doesn't feel stale, and you know how stale I always think that feels nowadays. That's all I have to say about Last Story.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm going to have a review of it up soon, hopefully this week. Maybe not, because it's an RPG, and I'm also reviewing Snapshot.
Yeah. Oh, how are you doing with Snapshot?
I played one level of Snapshot, and then it wouldn't stop crashing. So I looked into it, and a lot of people are having problems with the game crashing. But Retro Effect, the guys that made it, are super on top of it. Like, as soon as I tweeted about it, they were like, hey, send us an email, and I had already done that, so they just... And they have a chat room on their website, and when you go in there and say, hey, like, I went on there the day the game came out and was like, hey, what's up? And everybody in there was like, hey, and they're all people who worked on the game, so they're right on top of helping you out.
Awesome. Well, that game has been in development for ages. I think it was like the last two patches.
Yeah, the last two packs East. I've seen it at both of those.
I remember that because it was up there with Fez in sort of indie games that were taking ages to come out.
Yeah, but I don't think this one was as high profile as Fez.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Even though it's really cool. It was on my radar for last. I played it at both. I played it at the last packs, the packs before that. I just watched someone else play it.
Well, it's also by Carl Pulver, who's also a name that's been popping up in the indie industry.
Dude makes good games.
Offspring Fling and Depict 1, which are both fantastic games.
Yeah, I played Depict 1 and loved it. I haven't played Offspring Fling yet, but I intend to. It's on Steam and I want to buy it.
Yeah, it's great. I think you'll really like Offspring Fling. It's got a lot of Yoshi's Island stuff to it, and
it's very Super Famicom.
Yeah, yeah, and Yoshi's Island is one of the best Mario games, so.
Mm-hmm. But Snapshot, I mean, what I have played of it is great. You know, it's you're a little robot, and you solve puzzles by taking pictures of stuff, and when you take a picture of it, you take it, like it disappears, and you have it in the photo, and you place it somewhere else, and you use that mechanic to
get through the puzzles. So it's sort of like that one part of Braid, but expanded.
I don't remember that part of Braid.
Where you're on the puzzle pieces, but one of the puzzle pieces has like a little platform on it, and so you jump and you move it.
I guess. I haven't played Braid in a long time.
Okay, right.
I should play Braid again. I played it like back when it came out.
It's
on
good.
Mac.
It's good for a replay, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
What else have you been playing? Anything else that we could talk about?
Not really. Anything indie. I could talk about what I'm looking forward to.
Well, before you do that, I got one more thing to mention.
Just because 10 more minutes, dude.
In the mail today, I got the second expansion of Cards Against Humanity, which is not necessarily video games, but at the last PAX and the last PAX East, these guys were definitely like the kings of PAX. Like when I went to PAX East this year, every single room you went into, there were four or five tables playing a huge game of Cards Against Humanity. And there I got to meet the guys that made it, and I shot a video with them, and the next expansion, I'm very excited. And it's I just have looked at a bit of the cards. I don't like to look at them too much because I don't want to spoil myself. But do you know about this game at all?
I love Cards Against Humanity. I've played some online games of it before.
Yeah, it's basically it's like apples to apples, but for people with a sense of humor, where it's, you know, you have a black card. So like I'll do an example just for the listeners, where like I'll pick a random black card. Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet eating her curds, and a squadron of moles wearing aviator goggles.
Well, there are also ones which are like a big black.
Another card. Shot of morphine.
That was good.
And I'll get one more.
What's the one you made up? Arl Stein's ex-wives.
Arl Stein's ex-wives is one of them. I've got a lot of ones I've made up that I don't want to say on the because the expansions come with blank cards. A sweaty, panting leather daddy. Intimacy problems. A soulful rendition of Old Man River. That's a good one. Making a friend. Jeff Goldblum.
So basically, Cards Against Humanity is one of the best sort of more... Yeah. It's a dark card game as well.
Getting hilariously gangbanged by the Blue Man Group. it's fantastic. It's on Amazon. It's finally not selling out in a day, so you can get a copy of it. What's really stands out to me with this set is the first expansion came with a white card called A Big Black Dick. So that was one of the cards. And when I talked to the guys, they were on their website, they have a little test thing where you can play like a one-player game of Cards Against Humanity, and you get to rate your favorite cards, and whatever cards get played the most, they get all the information, and it goes into making the game better. And they told me that they were like far and away, like thousands and thousands of people more pick A Big Black Dick as their favorite card. And when you open this expansion, the very first card in it is a bigger, blacker dick.
That's brilliant.
So it's the first sequel card in Cards Against Humanity.
That's great.
Can't wait to play it. I just got it today, so I haven't actually played a game with anyone. I haven't added it to my set of the base set and the first expansion. So I will do that once I figure out. I need something bigger to hold all my cards in now.
Yeah. So we'll do, like, indie stuff that's not video games as well.
This is definitely indie related. Like, these guys use Kickstarter to put out they put the game out first, and then they use Kickstarter to put out the expansion and another printing of the game. This printing right now is their third printing, I think. They've been showing it at PAX. They've been like the darling of the last two PAXes. They have a deal right now where they're doing a special expansion with the Giant Bomb guys. So a lot of the Giant Bomb readers and the guys that work on Giant Bomb are helping them develop the next expansion. And they're totally super, super nice guys. If you go there, if you go to anything and you see them there, like hang out with them, get a chance. I play a game with them. They will sit down and play with you. I got them to sign my favorite card, so that was really cool. It's definitely super fantastic and fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else to cover?
Nothing really. I mean, I could talk about the games I'm looking forward to. Actually, we could talk about like games we're excited for, like while before they come out. I think maybe because there's like a bunch of stuff like Hotline Miami, the game by Cactus.
Hotline Miami is coming out. Retro City Rampage is coming out sometime.
Rampage is coming out. All of that.
Black Ops 2.
Black Ops 2. That's a very big indie title that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. Madden 13 in stores now.
Madden 13, I think that's I think, if anything, that's the most indie game that I'm really excited
for. Yeah. So this was a pilot episode for our podcast. It was a bit meandering and amorphous, but look forward to episodes with a more solid structure. We're getting a lot of guests to come on.
Well, next week, we have...
We have Sean Hatton, the also known as DJ Finish Him, the composer of the soundtrack to They Bleed Pixels.
Great name.
And also Miguel Sternberg, the creator of They Bleed Pixels. So we'll be talking to them in two separate segments.
Telling them
how much we love their game.
We should call that episode They Bleed Podcasts.
Sure.
Yay.
You know what? Probably. That'll happen.
Can I do some plugs?
Yeah, we're going to both do plugs.
I want you to listen to the Sega Addicts Kids Table, which is on iTunes and on sega-addicts.com. We just did an episode. Don't listen to this, the most recent episode, as your first one, because it's an episode where we all get drunk on it. So maybe another one would be best for a first time. But listen to that. That is good. And the Stevie Grant on Twitter. That's my Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I am at Mr. Matt J on Twitter, MrMattJay. And Stevie, you and I have another podcast. We host the Goosebumps Book Club on goosebumpsbookclub.tumblr.com, where every week you, Josh Newey, and I read...
Josh Newey from the Sega Addicts Kids Table.
From the Sega Addicts Kids Table and writer for Sega Addicts. We read a new Goosebumps book in order in the Goosebumps canon, and we make fun of it and talk about how usually not super good it is. But they're getting good again. We're finally on the next episode is Night of the Living Dummy.
And that's, I've read that one and you haven't yet. And that's,
yeah, I haven't read it yet.
It's one of
I generally read it like an hour before we record. You will remind me to read the book. And then a half hour later, I will start reading the book.
Fuck. Anyways, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. And have we'll you see got, you next week.
Have you got a sign? Have I got what?
Yeah. I let everyone know. Don't forget to save your game.